Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news. Stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the broadcast where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's so glad to have you back aboard. I'm sitting in the office the other day, and I overhear a telephone conversation. You know, you don't necessarily listen into other people's conversations, but sometimes you just hear the conversation, you can't help yourself. So my friend is on the cell phone. Talking to his wife, and his wife, apparently, someone had loaned her a used BMW to drive for the day. Don't know all the details, but my friend's on the phone with her, and he's saying, okay, so what's the problem? You're having trouble starting it. Okay. Right. Okay, do you want me to call him? Okay, you want me to call him and see if there's a trick to starting? Okay. At which point I said, oh, it's the BMW? Tell her the trick is she needs to call a technician, write him a check for $2,500, and then he'll tell her how to start the used BMW. Not that I have anything against Bavarian Motor Works in general. This is just based on my own anecdotal experience, okay? Anyway, they got a chuckle out of it, and eventually, I believe the vehicle did start, or perhaps he returned her Toyota to her. That may be how she got out of that fix. Anyway, I just thought that was worth noting for no particular reason. But let's jump right into the news of the week, because I've got a lot of it, and I'm not sure I can get to everything. So bear with me and listen quickly. I want to start with, of course, the big news of the week was the State of the Union address from our president, Barry Ho, Barack Hussein Obama. The State of the Union. My goodness. Well, before I get to the State of the Union, let me talk about, I got a story here from Tampa, Florida, from the Associated Press. They tell us Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, nonetheless, is calling on Congress to pass a law extending benefits to same-sex partners a day after he renewed his support for repealing the ban on homosexuals serving openly in the military. Okay, that's hard to even get out. Anyway, you guys remember the don't ask, don't tell, don't seek, don't smell policy right now in the U.S. military that allows homosexuals to, I don't know what exactly it allows them to do, but I'm uncomfortable with it, whatever it is. Anyway, so he's all excited. He's all a Twitter about extending benefits to homosexuals and allowing homosexuals into the barracks and onto the ships and into the planes and anywhere else he can put a homosexual. Barry Ho's excited about it. He has also, by the way, according to the Associated Press, called for the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act, which bars federal recognition of gay unions. Now, gay unions, oddly enough, ladies and gentlemen, it seems to me that the United States is practically a gay union at this point. In fact, the State of the Union address, I can hear in my own mind, through my own lens of original thought, how the State of the Union address should have opened. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States. Hooray, everybody cheers. Yay, yay, yay. Welcome to the Supreme Soviet, Mr. Obama. Anyway, Mr. Obama steps up upon the podium and approaches the lectern. Ladies and gentlemen, Madam Speaker, Mr. Vice President, distinguished guests, fellow Americans, the state of our union is gay. That's how it should have opened, is all I'm saying. Anyway, so you're going to sit there and read the paper? You're not going to laugh at my jokes? You know, I could use some support here is all I'm saying. The state of our union. Anyway, Now let's continue on, diving into the culture file. This maybe should be in the politics file, but I put it in the culture file because I believe it has a distinct impact on our culture. Although it's a story about MSNBC, which only has about 2,500 viewers. From MSNBC, Chris Matthews, after the State of the Union is Gay address by Barry Ho, Chris Matthews is quoted as saying about Barry, "He is post-racial by all appearances, you know. I forgot he was black tonight for an hour." I don't know what it means, but no one forgot that Chris Matthews was drunk and stupid. Anyway, I don't understand what he's talking about. He forgot he was black. Maybe Chris Matthews is some kind of racist, do you think? Quite possibly. Anyway, he's definitely stupid, and almost, I'm almost positive that he's at least tipsy. No, he's drunk. He's past the legal limit every time he goes on the air, in my humble opinion. Although I can honestly say I have never watched his broadcast since he began on MSNBC because we don't allow MSNBC into our house. But I see him quoted quite often in the papers, and I get the feeling that he's knocking a few back before airtime. All right, on into the politics file. Obama wants expanded nuclear loan guarantees. This is from ELP.com. What in the world is that? It's an electric light and power consortium website. Well, here's the story, Dateline Washington. President Barack Hussein Obama will request tripling the amount of loan guarantees for new nuclear power plants to more than $54 billion. Now, I'm in favor of this, okay? And so I'm going to say Barack Obama is doing the right thing in this case, and I'm glad he's doing it. And I'm not going to accuse him of being political, and I'm not going to make fun of him because he won a Nobel Peace Prize and now he's funding nuclear energy. Because there's another story where he's going to spend more on our nuclear arsenal than did George W. Bush. And I'm in support of that. There's another story, I don't know if I have it in here, where he wants to move the trials of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and the other madmen who attacked America. He wants to move, he's thinking maybe we should move those trials out of Manhattan. And I'm saying hats off, Barry. It's nice that you're finally condescending to some degree of sanity. You were always so smart that you were practically insane. And so I got nothing bad to say about Barry on these stories. And that's the difference, ladies and gentlemen, between a flack and an honest broker. A flack is someone that you'll hear on typical conservative radio who only knows to criticize Barack Obama and never gives him credit for anything he does that's correct. So I'm not a flack, okay? Now, I also don't have a syndicated radio broadcast, and I'm a little bit short of 20 million listeners, but we're growing by leaps and bounds every day. And by not being a flack and being an honest broker, hopefully I'll gain the respect of real conservative listeners out there who are looking for a little bit more than someone carrying the Republican Party's water, which I shall not do. Anyway, way to go, Barry, with the nuclear loan guarantees. I'm all for it. I want a nuclear power generation station in my neighborhood. I do. No, there's a company in New Mexico that makes them. It's like a big battery. They bury it in your neighborhood, and it powers the whole neighborhood for 10 or 15 years. It's a great idea. Hyperion Power. Check them out. You might want to buy their stock. Although I wouldn't recommend buying anybody's stock right now. I wouldn't want to be held accountable for that. All right, from Bob Unruh over at WorldNet Daily. Here we go. We have if you read this story, the taxpayers have paid over $100,000 for Nancy Pelosi's in-flight booze and food, but mostly booze. If you look at this receipt that Bob Unruh uncovered and the folks over at Judicial Watch, there's one receipt, and that's just part of more than $100,000. Bill that taxpayers have paid for in-flight services, including food and liquor, for House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's trips on Air Force jets over the last 2 years. So on this receipt, I'm looking at it. It's so neat. They've got a scanned copy. We've got Maker's Mark Whiskey, Courvoisier Cognac, Johnny Walker Red, Scotch, Grey Goose Vodka, E&J Brandy, Bailey's Irish Cream, Bacardi Light Rum, Jim Beam Whiskey, Beefeater Gin, Dewar Scotch, Bombay Sapphire Gin, Jack Daniels, and Corona Beer.
Wait, this is one sitting?
This is one flight for her. So, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you my theory on this. In American democratic politics, you know you've achieved real power when everyone around you must be intoxicated in order to tolerate you for any period of time. And that is about where Nancy Pelosi is in her career. I've met businessmen like this, okay? They're these types that lord it over everyone all the time. And so every time you get around them, you're reaching for something to drink just so you can make it through the next hour and a half without laying the guy out on the floor. And I think Nancy Pelosi is quite similar in her effect on the people around her. She encourages drunkenness. And for that, she should probably be arrested just for her negative influence on the poor saps who have to get on a plane with her. Anyway, $100,000 over the past 2 years for booze. And we don't know that Nancy was drinking all of it because we know that she's on a pretty potent cocktail of prescription drugs. Or we don't know that. We suspect it. It's alleged. So I don't think she can mix the booze with the 4 or 5 antidepressants that she's on. Allegedly, possibly, in my humble opinion. But the people around her are knocking back the booze.
But you can mix the medical marijuana.
Now, she may be mixing in some medical marijuana. We're going to get to that later in the show. Isn't it interesting, though, now that you bring that up, that marijuana is now preceded by the word medical in almost every story we hear? What does that teach the children? That marijuana is something good that you get at the doctor's office to make you feel better. Anyway, that concerns me. We'll get to that a little bit later, and I'll prove that assertion that the news media is impressing upon the minds of our impressionable youth is simply not true. But first, into the politics file. Columbia, South Carolina. South Carolina's Lieutenant Governor Andre Bauer has likened government assistance to the poor to feeding stray animals. He says, "My grandmother was not a highly educated woman, but she told me as a small child to quit feeding stray animals. You know why? Because they breed. You're facilitating the problem if you give an animal or a person ample food supply. They'll reproduce, especially ones that don't think too much further than that." I don't really have a problem with the reproducing part of poor people. I don't. But the stray animal analogy to welfare holds true. If you give a man a fish, and then you keep giving a man a fish, he'll never get a job, and he'll show up at your door every day looking for a fish. And then he'll start to bring his other bum friends. They'll come down there from the medical marijuana clinic, to your house to get their fish every night. Anyway, Democrats are outraged at the South Carolina. He must be a Republican, I suppose. Anyway, one Democrat said, "I'm disgusted by these comments. They show an unbelievable lack of compassion toward the unemployed workers in our state who are hurting during these hard times." That's State Senator Vincent Sheehan, a Democrat who is running for governor. He says that Lieutenant Governor Andre Bauer's remarks were immoral and out of line. Do I want to do more on this? I don't want to do any more on this. I like doing the southern accent, though. Let's see here. Oh, the governor, the apologetic now Republican lieutenant governor, who's apparently running for governor, he said, "Do I wish I used a different metaphor? Of course I do. I didn't intend to offend anyone." And you know what I would say, Lieutenant Governor Andre Bauer? Offending people is a great way to get their attention. It's a great way. You know, but then you have to offer a real solution, which Republicans are not really very well known for. In fact, they're usually known for offering solutions that are just a little bit less leftist than the communist, socialist, pinko reds that are running the Democrat Party. That's what Republicans are known for. So our mission here at the Weekly Worldview is to pull the mainstream to the right in such a dramatic fashion that eventually this broadcast is considered to be middle of the road. And we need to start by letting Republican politicians know that if they keep trying to fool us with this leftist balderdash, and if they keep apologizing for comments that are, well, at least mostly accurate and insightful, no doubt, well, we're just going to give up on the Republican Party, which, by the way, I did in 1996. Gave up on them. All right. Now, let's move into, quickly, the personhood file. Dateline Washington, D.C., a column by Cal Thomas. It is titled, Recognizing Personhood. Cal says, among the interesting arguments in last week's 5-4 Supreme Court decision granting corporations First Amendment protections when making campaign contributions was the majority's decision to effectively treat corporations as persons. The ruling came the week of the annual March for Life, when thousands come to Washington to mark the 1973 decision that downgraded a human fetus to the level of non-person. Cal says, does anyone see the contradiction or at least the moral inconsistency in these two rulings? Yes, Cal, we see it. Cal says there's evidence that all the marches and the pro-life pregnancy centers are working. There's been roughly 50 million abortions in the United States since 1973. I'm not sure I get that. Cal says there's evidence that the marches and the pro-life pregnancy centers are working. Then he says there have been roughly 50 million abortions in the United States since 1973. Cal, to me, that would say that the marches are not working. Now, the pro-life pregnancy centers, I'm sure, are working on a case-by-case basis. But overall, Cal, the movement is not working, okay? It has not been working. Anyway, Cal goes on, opinion polls reveal a public increasingly concerned about the unrestricted disposal of human life and the potential contribution those lives could make to America and to humanity. The shift in opinion is especially notable among the young. And we've quoted these polls. You know that young people are skewing pro-life. Anyway, Cal winds up his assessment by saying this. But he has a hope that a Supreme Court, which now sees corporations as persons, might again recognize the personhood of babies in the womb. Not the Supreme Court, Cal. The Supreme Court is not going to recognize unborn children as persons. The Supreme Court is not known for overturning itself and then apologizing. They're not famous for that, Cal. So don't hold your breath and count on the Supreme Court, Cal. How about taking your head out of the sand and looking around at the personhood movement that's exploding all over the country? 40 states, active petition drives and initiatives and legislation in a half a dozen states right now, Cal. It's called the personhood movement. Wake up and see it, Mr. Thomas. Doug McBurney, and I never would have expected a saxophone solo from my extremely attractive audio host.
It's in excess, the
80s. Oh, okay. They didn't have a lot of saxophone solos in the 80s.
Yeah.
Amazing that you found that. Well, all right. Now let's dive in. Anyway, I wasn't kicking. Were you implying that I was kicking?
No.
Sometimes you kick, sometimes you get kicked. I'm not kicking Cal Thomas. I'm just saying, Cal, how can you do a whole article about the personhood of an unborn child and not mention the personhood movement? It's just embarrassing for Cal Thomas. All right, now let's move into the war file. We've got way too much news. I'm way behind. Benjamin Netanyahu, according to the Associated Press, declared last Sunday that his country would retain parts of the West Bank forever, he said. Forever. Yeah, he laid claim to the disputed territory just hours after meeting with George Mitchell, preposterous, worthless, inept, and irrelevant Obama Middle East envoy. And Netanyahu said, our message is clear. We are planting here. We will stay here. We will build here. This place will be an inseparable part of the state of Israel for eternity. Oh, man. And you know, folks, I don't know Bibi's religiosity. I don't know if he's an observant Jew. I don't know if he's a messianic. I imagine he's not messianic. But anyway, These remarks, this type of remark from Jewish leaders, this is why wicked people hate the Jews, is because the Jews have a claim on eternity. And whenever they assert that claim, they remind the wicked people that there is a God who is going to judge the world and is going to judge them personally, and the wicked hate that. They just hate being reminded of all that. All right, now let's move on because there's a lot going on in the war file. From Tehran, Iran, Iran's supreme leader predicted the destruction of Israel in comments posted on his website last Wednesday. This is a story that you could read just about once or twice a month. But anyway, President Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has called Israel, in the past, he's called Israel a cancerous tumor that must be wiped from the map. And the Iranian leader said, definitely the day will come when nations of the region will witness the destruction of the Zionist regime. Khamenei was quoted as saying, quote, how soon or late Israel's demise will happen depends on how Islamic countries and Muslim nations approach the issue. He's approaching it with nuclear weapons, so we know how Iran feels about the whole situation. And I'm not going to say anything about that because I've been praying that the Jews would do something about these people in Iran. Because it's pretty obvious Barry Ho and George Mitchell and Nancy Pelosi have other things on their mind. I mean, Nancy's half drunk all the time. Well, I don't know if Nancy's drunk. Anyway, I don't want to go back into that. Listen to this. This in from the Jerusalem Post. According to Muammar Gaddafi, Al-Qaeda detainees in his nation will be kept in prison even after they complete their sentences in order to prevent them from engaging in terrorist activity. The Libyan leader, he said that on Thursday, last Thursday, he reportedly called the prisoners heretics, adding that prolonged jail confinement would also prevent terrorists from moving to other countries in the region in order to plan attacks there. Wow. Muammar Gaddafi should be in our Justice Department, for crying out loud. Move over, Eric Holder. So Eric Holder wants to put these people on trial, a trial for which they could be found not guilty. And even George Bush released these maniacs from Guantanamo, and they've now gone back over there to Yemen, and they're figuring out how to put bombs in their underwear. How is it that Muammar Gaddafi ends up making sense to me, and my own government seem like a bunch of incompetent boobs? I mean, is that scary or what? Of course, Muammar doesn't quite go far enough in my book, because I believe that these detainees should be interrogated, we should get as much information out of them as we can, and they should be summarily executed. Summarily. You can look that, you'll have to Google that if you want to figure out what that means. Summary execution. All right. Now let's move on into the war file. The Justice Department, as I said earlier, is looking for other places to hold the 9-1-1 terror trials. Let's see, President Obama, according to the Justice Department, is still committed to trying Mohammed and Sheikh Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and four other terrorists in federal court. Yeah. So Barry Ho and Eric Holder are completely deranged. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I want to give them credit for making some right decisions, but boy, they make it really difficult when they say stupid things like these people should be tried in a civilian court. Accordingly, the Justice Department says that the president agrees with the Attorney General's opinion that Mohammed Sheikh Khalid and the others can be litigated successfully and securely in the United States of America, just like other terrorists have been in the past. I would remind Mr. Holder and Mr. Ho, Barry, president, that 9/11 wasn't like all the other terrorist attacks, you idiots. That was the point where we all were supposed to wake up and realize that we were at war. These weren't criminals. These are enemy warriors. They declared war on us, you bozos. But what are you going to do? You try to give credit where credit is due, and then they make it as difficult as possible. But let's move on. From the Times Online in London, 12 men arrested in Malaysia this month for alleged terrorist offenses had connections to the Nigerian student accused of attempting to blow up a U.S. passenger aircraft on Christmas Day with his underwear. Yes. The Malaysian Home Minister insisted that the detained men, these 12 who've been arrested in Malaysia, they were arrested 11 days ago at a gathering of Muslims in Kuala Lumpur, and he says they were, quote, a serious security threat to the country, unquote. They included at least one Malaysian, four Syrians, one Yemeni, one Jordanian, and two Nigerians. Boy, talk about an instance where one grenade would have really come in handy. Man. Anyway, way to go over there in Malaysia. It's scary to me that Mahmoud Abdul Ahmulma Abtumadad, or whatever his name was, the underwear bomber guy, it's scary to me that we didn't get a little more information out of him. I have a suspicion that there are other underwear bombers who are waiting, trying to get in. The Dateline Heathrow Airport, two men were stopped boarding a U.S.-bound planes at Heathrow just days before Britain's terror threat was raised to severe. Security sources say an Egyptian was stopped as he tried to board an American Airlines flight to Miami, and then a man from Saudi Arabia was banned from boarding a United Airlines flight to Chicago the next day. Anti-terror officials said the past week had seen an unusually high number of people on their no-fly list trying to board U.S.-bound planes. And that begs the question, what are you doing with these people on the no-fly list when they try to get on a plane? Are you at least taking away their library card or something? The article doesn't say what they do. I don't get it. If you're on the no-fly list and you try to get on the plane, I think you should be beaten within an inch of your life and then interrogated. Anyway, let's see. Part of Manchester Airport Terminal 3 there in England was evacuated just days ago after an Asian man in his 20s tried to take a white powder onto the plane bound for Heathrow. He was not arrested. Turns out he was with Nancy Pelosi. It was just cocaine. He was allowed to go on his way. All right. No, now we don't have any receipts that connect Nancy Pelosi to any illicit drugs. I just made that up. I don't want Nancy's reputation to be impugned in any way on this broadcast. All right. Okay, Osama bin Laden is rearing his ugly head again. That's right, Dateline Cairo from the Associated Press. Osama bin Laden claimed responsibility for the attempt to bomb a Detroit-bound airliner on Christmas Day in a new audio message released last Sunday. Now, folks, you know how I feel about the word alleged. If ever there was a place that the word alleged belonged in this story, it would be right between Osama bin Laden and claimed. It should be Osama bin Laden allegedly claimed responsibility. Yeah. Because we don't know if this is Osama bin Laden. But then everyone, the newspapers report it as if someone has already evaluated and analyzed the audio and we know it's Osama. But if someone's on videotape shooting a grandmother to death in a 7-Eleven, everything he did was alleged if you read the story. I just don't get it. Anyway, they left alleged out. So the day after the tape surfaced, no one's even had time to analyze it, and they don't say alleged. This annoys me. Let's see what the alleged Obama... Let's see... did I say Obama? Let's see what the Osama impersonator had to say. He said, "The message delivered to you through the plane of the heroic warrior Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab, who is a confirmation of the previous message sent by the heroes of September 11th. America will never dream of security unless we will have it in reality in Palestine." I said Palestine. Okay, yeah, right. I'm not buying this, okay? What else does he have to say? He says, "God willing, our raids on you will continue as long as your support for the Israelis continues." If I'm not mistaken, wasn't it Saudi Arabia that Osama bin Laden was all upset about? The fact that the Crusader warriors had set up bases on the holiest of holy, holy sites there in the godforsaken deserts of Saudi Arabia. I don't remember him being all upset about Palestine. But I guess this Osama impersonator, he has issues with the Palestinian situation there, where the Arab countries have refused for 60 years to allow Palestinians to return to the countries of their origin. Whereas the Israeli government has allowed Palestinians to settle in Israel. That's the real situation, Mr. Osama impersonator. All right, now this closes the case right here. Dateline Cairo, Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden has called for a world... I can't even... This is so ridiculous. I can't even read it with a straight face. Osama bin Laden has called for the world to boycott American goods and the U.S. dollar, blaming the United States and other industrialized countries for global warming. Come on. All right, that's about it. Now, again, the word alleged, is missing. It's conspicuous in its absence in this story. But I don't know that Osama bin Laden had issues with global warming. Anyway, couldn't we all assume that if Osama bin Laden were indeed alive, he would be aware that anthropogenic global warming has been exposed as a hoax, okay? I mean, I know he's supposed to be living in a cave, but he would have heard about it, okay? He might be in a cave, but he's not in the newsroom at MSNBC, which is the only place on the planet where the news of the hoax has yet to permeate. Osama bin Laden would not embarrass himself by coming out and basically allying himself with that embarrassment over at the IPCC over in East Anglia and Albert Gore. I mean, come on, folks. Just accept it, okay? Deal with it. Osama bin Laden is deader than Elvis. I'm your host, Doug and Bernie. I wanted to hear a little bit more of that. All right, we're back. No saxophone in that one. There you go. All right, returning to our roots here. Stick with the electric guitar, okay? All right, now let's move into the culture file. Dateline Ridgefield, Washington. A Washington State SWAT officer shot and killed a young bull after deputies, the animal's owner, and others failed to stop it from running loose near a local park. Now, a Ridgefield woman, according to the report, allegedly riding a horse. No, they didn't say alleged there. She was actually riding a horse. She was riding a horse in the area, and she tried to corral the bull, but her horse got spooked and bucked her off. How embarrassing is that? Man, that's just, I would not want to be in that situation. You try to take command of a situation, you end up landing on the left side of your head and your left shoulder, and you're covered with dirt, and you just stand up, and now your horse is loose, too. It's just embarrassing. Anyway, after the bull was shot, a rendering business began immediately skinning it. A rendering business? What's wrong? They couldn't find a butcher? I mean, this is a bull, for crying out loud. My father is a skilled tradesman in many trades, as a matter of fact, but one of them being a meat cutter. And I guess butchers are getting hard to find anymore. It's hard to find a young American who can do anything with their hands. I mean, hire a plumber, he's going to be 50 years or older. Hire an electrician, I only know one electrician who's under 30. And you can't find a butcher under 30 years old, I don't think, unless it's a robot butcher, which I believe they have now. They do it all. They do it all with computers and chainsaws in big cold rooms. Why am I talking about this? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, it's sad that they couldn't find a butcher and the bull was rendered to make glue or something. That's just sad. What's that? Yeah, well, they could make a couch out of it, but I'm bummed out about the meat. You know, I'm sure they got the leather, but anyway, let's move on into the culture file from Beijing, China, from The Guardian over in London. Chinese legal experts are proposing a ban on eating dogs and cats. Yes, the recommendation will be submitted to higher authorities within the Communist Party there in April of this year. Now, The Guardian reminds us that in ancient times, there in China, dog meat was considered a medicinal tonic. Now, today, it's commonly available throughout the country, but particularly in the north, where dog stew is popular for its supposed warming qualities. Yeah. Such traditions, by the way, according to the article, are increasingly criticized by an affluent, pet-loving urban middle class. Online petitions against dog and cat consumption have attracted tens of thousands of signatures. Now, did you catch that? Tens of thousands. Now, China is a country of over 1 billion people, and they've got 300 million people online, and the anti-dog and cat eating petitions can only attract tens of thousands of signatures. So you do the math. My guess is they still like their dog and cat. That's all over there in China. Let's see. If passed, the new law would oblige law enforcement authorities to close down thousands of dog restaurants and butchers who supply the meat. So they still have butchers in China. They're just busy with dogs and cats. And that's just sad. I don't have any dogs or cats. We gave up the dogs and cats when we started having kids. Maybe when we get old and the kids are all out of the house, we will have another dog and or cat. More than likely a cat, right? Yeah, I don't know. I'd rather have grandkids in the house. All right, now, back to the article, this critically important article from China. An increasingly affluent population there in China is less dependent on dog and cat meat. And that is great news for China. They're less dependent on dog and cat meat. That's wonderful. Okay. They are dependent on holding massive amounts of U.S. debt. And so there's a good chance that they might be eating dog and cat again in the future. If they keep buying the worthless treasuries that are being issued by the maniacs in Washington who seem to think you can print money forever just because you wanna. All right, but I don't want to get off track here. Dateline, Islam is bad, Pakistan. Pakistani President Asif Ali Zardari. There's too many vowels in this name. Couldn't you stick a few consonants in there and make it a little easier to pronounce? Asif Ali Zardari has a black goat slaughtered at his house almost every day to ward off evil eyes and protect him from black magic. That's right. This is the president of Pakistan. A spokesman for the president. I know. He told the Dawn newspaper there that goats were slaughtered as an act of shadaka, which means voluntary charity in Islam, whereby one gives out money or the meat of slaughtered animals to the poor to win Allah's blessing and stave off misfortune. Hundreds of goats have been sacrificed at the president's house since he was sworn in September of 2008. So the world is...
Maybe they have petition against...
maybe someone should start a petition against the slaughtering of all these goats. But he's giving the meat to the poor, which is a good thing. Okay. But he's doing it because he's a superstitious nutcase. And by the way, he's the president of a nuclear-armed Muslim nation. But, you know, sleep well at night. Don't worry about anything. Don't have any concerns. The world is in good hands. Dateline Moscow, Russia, for all you public school teachers. The mayor of Moscow, known for his overtly homophobic statements, said last Monday that he would never allow a gay pride parade in his city, calling it satanic and saying that the marchers should be punished. He said, "A gay parade cannot be called anything but satanic act." That's Yuri Lutskov. He was speaking to an educational conference, and he said, "We haven't permitted such a parade, and we won't permit it in the future." Luskov called for gay marchers to be punished. And he doesn't mean happy marchers, by the way. He wouldn't mind a happy parade. He doesn't want a homosexual parade there in Moscow. He said, it's high time that we stop propagating nonsense discussions about human rights and bring to bear on them the full force of justice and the law. Wow. He wants the homosexuals prosecuted for marching down the middle of the street telling everybody that they're queer, which I'm very uncomfortable with. Homosexuals walking down the middle of the street telling everybody about what they do and what they do, disgusting things they do. Anyway, gay rights campaigners, as you can well imagine, are very upset. They're defiant, in fact. And they have reaffirmed that plans for this year's Gay Pride Parade will go ahead despite the ban. That's what they say. And one spokesman says, we don't plan to make any changes. We still plan to hold the Gay Pride Parade on May 29th. You're all invited. That's one spokesperson, actual audio tape, right from Moscow. Anyway, the president first called the Gay Pride Parade satanic back in 2007, prompting gay rights campaigners to sue him for libel, a case in the Russian courts that the homosexuals lost. Yeah. So, anyway, there's still some sanity in Russia. I don't know about this Luzkov's politics, but I appreciate him keeping the queers in the closet. Thank you very much. We could all use a little bit more of that. All right, now, speaking of disgusting things, from Chicago, a story about Oprah Winfrey. Oprah Winfrey is one of the most powerful women in the world, according to the WorldNet Daily article. She has a multi-billion-dollar empire, and she tells people what books to read. Anyway, there's two authors have written a new book to call into question Oprah's influence and spirituality. Their book is titled Oh God. Do you get it? Oh in quotation marks. That's her magazine. Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh God. A Dialogue on Truth and Oprah's Spirituality. The book recounts Oprah's early life in the Christian church and how she fell away from the faith after hearing a sermon on Exodus 34:13, which states that God is a jealous God. Since then, she's immersed herself in all different waves of philosophy and spiritual beliefs and has promoted pantheistic views that all is God and God is all. Particularly jelly donuts, in Oprah's case. Now, no, I don't want to make fun of Oprah because she can't control certain appetites of hers. She has an appetite for spiritual weirdness and pantheism that's personally detestable to me. But let's examine, because I just said Exodus 34:14, and 99% of the entire civilized world said, huh? Exodus 34:13. All right, so Exodus 34:13 does state that God is a jealous God. But let me give you some context. Let's go to Exodus 25, that's verse 20, warning. And chapter 5. Oh, warning, Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not tolerate anyone who would ever dare quote a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. Okay. So let's go to the book of Exodus, if you have your Bibles with you. And let's go to the 20th verse and the 5th, I'm sorry, the 20th chapter and the 5th verse, where it says, God is a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate him. Now, what I was confused about in this article was that Exodus 34:13, it just says you shall worship no other God, for the Lord, whose name is jealous, is a jealous God. I don't know why Oprah would have such a big problem with that. Because most people who want to actively hate and accuse and challenge the living God, they use Exodus 20 and verse 5, because it says he visits the iniquities of the fathers upon the children. So anyway, I want to explain this verse, because I think this is the one that Oprah has a problem with. I don't know that the article is correct. Anyway, so visiting the iniquities of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. So one might look at that and say, oh boy, if you hate God, he's going to curse your children for three or four generations. I can't be down with a God like that. Oprah, don't roll like that. I can't be down with a God like that. But Oprah, you just don't understand the Jewish form of writing, number one. And you don't understand the context of the verse. This is God's warning that if you hate him, your children will suffer unto the third and fourth generation. And by the way, Oprah, the Bible is full of examples of children who turned to God despite the fact that their parents were wicked, even pagan, even actively against God. The whole New Testament is full of those examples, Oprah. So for anyone to accuse God of visiting the iniquities of the fathers upon the children actively, as in some kind of mystical, magical curse, or God shakes curse dust on the kids throughout their whole lives, well, you're just stupid, and you don't want to know the truth about the living God of the universe, who created the universe, who loves people, who wants to be in communion with people, but will not force people to be with him. Those who hate him, they will suffer unto the third and fourth generation of those who hate him. Now, those who love him, it's a different story. Oprah, you're not part of that crowd, but we hope you do become a part of that crowd. Although, if her show made it into heaven, that could turn heaven into hell. Oh, no, well, if she repented, I suppose she'd be all right. Okay, all right. Into the justice file. Do we want to go into the justice file? I don't know if I want to go into the justice file. Okay, we will, quickly. Dateline San Francisco, the Supreme Court has authorized so-called John Doe arrest warrants that contain only a DNA profile of an unknown suspect. This is great news. So police agencies are increasingly using no-name warrants to get around the statute of limitations issues. So here's what they do. They take a DNA profile from a crime scene, they submit it to a judge, and they get a warrant to arrest this unidentified suspect based on his DNA profile. What that does is that stops the clock on the statute of limitations. So that means 30 years later, if they find this creep, he can be arrested because the warrant was issued before the statute of limitations ended. I'm against the statute of limitations, and I'm glad that there's now a way legally around it. That's great news. Now, meanwhile, in what's left of England, one of Britain's most dangerous gangsters, according to an article from the Times Online, one of Britain's most dangerous gangsters has been using Facebook to threaten and intimidate his enemies from a maximum security prison. Yes, Colin Gunn, who's an underworld godfather who ordered the execution of two grandparents, has been able to correspond freely with up to 565 Facebook friends on the social networking site for the past 2 months. Gunn is serving a 35-year-old sentence for conspiracy to murder, and he's said to be still running his drug and organized crime cartel from jail. His Facebook page, which appears to have been able to update on a daily basis, was shut down last Friday after a newspaper broke the article. And the Home Secretary there, Jack Straw, well, he says he's going to crack down on Facebook use by prisoners. Golly. Can you believe that England is in the hands of these buffoons? No wonder Western civilization is collapsing around us. Jack, forget about Facebook. How about cracking down on murderers? How about cracking down on murderers with executions, you bozo? It's unbelievable. England may never survive. Here's a guy running his criminal empire from Facebook. He should have been executed for conspiracy to murder people. Not to mention the fact that he's drugs and organized crime and everything else. It's true. England. I mean, forget about it. There is no England anymore. She's got the sunset on her shoulder when she hurt him. He wasn't enough. She wasn't enough. Wants to know what. Look at the chance. Hey, come on and dance. It's rush hour for me. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney, rounding third and heading for home. We got a lot of news to get into, ladies and gentlemen. The United Nations, over there at the unexpert panel on climate change, apparently based claims about the ice disappearing from the world's mountaintops on two sources. One was a feature article published in a popular magazine for mountain climbers The other was a dissertation written by a geography student at the University of Bern in Switzerland.
Yeah.
So that's the in-depth scientific analysis by the IPCC and the East Anglian Global Warming Nutjobs. Some kid's paper and an article they found in a magazine at their dentist's office. And they said, oh, no, the glaciers are all melting. Anyway, skeptics, according to the article from The Telegraph, have seized upon the mistakes to cast doubt over the validity of the IPCC and have called for the panel to be disbanded. Disbanded? How about arrested? How about arrested? Well, let's talk about that. From the Daily Mail, scientists at the heart of the ClimateGate email scandal did break the law when they refused to give raw data to the public. The Information Commissioner's Office said that the University of East Anglia researchers breached the Freedom of Information Act when handling requests from China from climate change skeptics. But the scientists will escape prosecution because the offenses took place more than 6 months ago, and the statute of limitations on being a liar about global warming, that statute of limitations has run out. Apparently, if you can get away with a gross lie for more than 6 months in England, you can't be prosecuted. And there's no DNA involved, so it's kind of hard to... That's just sad. But at least we all know the truth, that there is some solace in that knowledge, is that now we see that these lying hypocrite socialists have been exposed, and we can at least take some comfort in that. Now on to the justice file. A McDonald's worker was fired in Leeuwarden, in the north of the Netherlands. Yeah, the worker was fired at a McDonald's branch last year for giving a colleague on a break a more expensive cheeseburger instead of the hamburger that the other worker had paid for. So McDonald's claimed that the worker who put the cheese on broke the rules. The rules say no free gifts to family, friends, or colleagues. So the friend orders a hamburger. The worker slips a slice of cheese on it, and McDonald's fires her because she got caught. So, well, a district court in Leeuwarden in the north of the Netherlands says the dismissal was too severe a measure. And it's in their actual decision. This is a judge's decision. They say, quote, it is just a slice of cheese, unquote. This is a court responsible for upholding the laws against theft. And they say, quote, it was just a slice of cheese. And this person was fired. The decision came days after the fast food chain. Now, listen, this is what really steamy about this article. First of all, you've got a judge here that doesn't realize that an employer has the right to fire someone for stealing anything. Anything. Doesn't matter. How big or how small. Stealing is stealing. It's the principle, Mr. Justice. This is a judge. Anyway. But the article from the Telegraph over in London, a liberal rag, I'm certain, over there, they did uncover East Anglia and all the nonsense about global warming, but there's still a bunch of sap liberal losers in a deteriorating and declining England that will no doubt sink into the ocean before too long. Here's how they end the article. The court's decision came days after the fast food chain reported an increase in net profits by almost 25% in the last quarter of 2009. So, to the journalists, alleged journalists at McDonald's, what does company profits have to do with this story? The fact that an employee stole something and was fired, and then the courts don't realize that you're not allowed to steal.
If she wasn't stealing, it would have been 30%.
Yeah, if they weren't stealing all the cheese, maybe they would have made a 30% profit. But that's all beside the point. Was the court influenced by the profit of the company? Yes. They live in a socialist paradise there in the north of the Netherlands, there in Leeuwarden. And so the government's been stealing their money for so long and giving it to people who don't deserve it that they don't realize that stealing is wrong anymore. They've been trained well by their own government. It's just sad. Let's move into the domestic tranquility file. The lead investigator in the slaying in Mexico of a Southern California school board member has himself been killed in an ambush. Yeah, the chief investigator, Manuel Acosta, was ambushed near his office back on January 15th by gunmen in a pickup truck. He was shot several times in the chest and torso. He survived for some time, but he succumbed to his wounds last Tuesday. Authorities didn't immediately disclose the initial attack, saying they hoped to better protect Acosta by letting his assailants assume he was dead. By the way, five other people are known to have been killed in the attack. But you know what we don't know now is whether or not Acosta is actually dead or not. Yeah, is he alive or dead? We don't know. Because they reported that he's dead, but maybe they're just doing that to trick the Mexican mafia. Or maybe he actually died. One thing we do know, domestic tranquility in Southern California is dead and has been dead for quite some time. From CNN, Plant City, Florida, police have identified human remains found buried under a recently added concrete driveway at a home in Plant City as missing lottery millionaire Abraham Shakespeare. Shakespeare, a 43-year-old truck driver, won a $31 million Florida lottery prize back in 2006. A year later, he won a court challenge from a fellow trucker who had accused him of snatching the winning ticket out of his wallet while the two were delivering meat to Miami restaurants. Just a sad case. I mean, you don't know what's going on there. Did the other trucker kill him out of a jealous rage for him having stolen his fortune? Anyway, that story will... I just want to do that because that's an update on a story we did a couple months ago when the guy first disappeared. More from the domestic tranquility file from Salt Lake City. A 70-year-old woman shot and killed her former daughter-in-law on Saturday in the parking lot of the preschool where the daughter-in-law worked. The suspect then called 911 and was waiting at the scene when officers arrived. When asked why she had fired the shots, she told the 911 dispatcher, "I don't know, and that's all I'm going to say." And I'm afraid that's just not enough, ma'am. You have a gun in your hand. We have a dead person here. You're going to say more than that. But here in America, you're allowed to just take the Fifth Amendment and just shut your mouth and not say anything. And it's like supposed to be a riddle, a puzzle for the police to figure out. Anyway, let's move on into the domestic tranquility file from Taunton, Massachusetts. A Massachusetts judge has ordered a 37-year-old man to serve 12 to 15 years in state prison for beating and biting his girlfriend's 3-year-old daughter so severely that he permanently disfigured the child. Brian James of New Bedford was sentenced last Monday, 3 days after a jury found him guilty. Prosecutors accused James of abusing his live-in girlfriend's daughter back in 07. Doctors said the girl's lip was mutilated and appeared to have been bitten off. Unbelievable. This man should be put to death. Yeah. I said, well, okay. His lip should be ripped off. And his ear, by the way, should be ripped off. He also disfigured her ear. All right. Let's see here. From the personhood file, Keisha Jones, who was charged last year in a plot to kill her husband's mistress. I'm sorry. In a plot to kill her husband's mistress's baby. Has pleaded not guilty to attempted murder, attempted abortion, and other charges. In December, listen to this, folks. Talk about a nation where the hearts of the women have been turned against the children. Listen to this. In December, Jones ordered a drug that could cause an abortion, then tricked the girlfriend, this is her husband's mistress, tricked her into picking it up and taking it with a cell phone call, pretending to be someone from her obstetrician's office. So the baby ended up being born 2 months early, but the baby survived. Jones then tried again. Posing as the baby's mother, she sent a man to the hospital with 2 bottles of tainted liquid saying it was breast milk. And she instructed the nurses to feed it to the baby. It was poison. Well, the hospital staff grew suspicious and called police. And the woman's been arrested. Now, authorities said last week the baby is healthy. Now, folks, wanting to kill the mistress... or the husband, I can fully understand. You're a woman, your husband's cheating on you, you find out he's got a mistress. I can understand her wanting to kill either one of them. But the baby? Wow. It just doesn't compute in my mind. I mean, when the women of a culture develop a hatred of children, and they can casually take their lives, that culture will not survive unto the third or fourth generation. It will not. It will either repent or it will be destroyed. And I'm not talking about God sending down lightning bolts or God setting it up so that Iran nukes us or God setting it up so that Osama bin Laden comes back from the dead and attacks America. I'm talking about America being destroyed by our own hand. Because God doesn't need to actively destroy anyone. We do a perfectly good job of that on our own. And when we throw off the guidance and the knowledge that are in the revealed word of God, you can count on death and destruction in the end of a civilization. Speaking of that, on to the decline and fall of Britain. The first film shot entirely by chimpanzees has been broadcast on the BBC as part of a natural history documentary. Yes, the filmmaking exercise, according to an article from the BBC, the filmmaking exercise is part of a scientific study into how chimpanzees perceive the world and each other. It was shown on BBC Channel 2 last Wednesday. Making the movie was the brainchild, if it can be called that, of primatologist Ms. Betsy Harelko, who is studying for a PhD in primate behavior. Now, what are you going to do with that PhD? I mean, so England is full of PhDs in primate behavior, and the Western world can't find a butcher or a carpenter or a plumber anymore, for crying out loud. Now, listen to this. Despite the fact that the chimps had never taken part in a research project before, just that line alone, you're like, duh, they're chimpanzees. All right, now wait. Despite the fact that the chimps had never taken part in a research project before, Harelko says they soon displayed an interest in filmmaking. Now, you might wonder, how does something like this happen? Well, here's what it is, ladies and gentlemen. Now, we're going to have to come across the pond, but the United States is inexorably linked with our cousins across the pond there in England. And here's how the perception of chimpanzees could have been skewed to this degree in your and my lifetime. From Denver, Colorado. Colorado lawmakers have an unlikely ally in their first attempt to curb the state's booming medical marijuana industry. Owners of some of the shops that sell pot want regulation. Why? Well, they want to, number one, they want to keep competitors from building medical marijuana dispensaries, which we used to call dope houses. They want to stop them from building them too close, right? Many dispensary owners say they're on board with regulations, and they want uniform guidelines to avert a more severe crackdown. The Colorado proposal, by the way, would make it more difficult for recreational pot users to become legal medical marijuana patients. Isn't this just like the governing attitude that rules the day today? Let's make it more difficult for recreational pot users to break the law. No. How about we make it so they will not do it? No, our government doesn't know how to do that anymore. The people in charge of justice in the United States, in Britain, just forget about it. They have no idea how to make it so criminals stop what they're doing. There are ways. And I don't have time because we're almost at the end of the show. Anyway, let's see. One dope dealer who was interviewed for the article, he wants lawmakers to pass laws now before even more dispensaries open up. And he wants to prevent those with possible criminal ties from giving the pot industry a bad name. The booming pot industry out here. Thousands and thousands of 18 to 24-year-old young men suddenly have come down with all these chronic illnesses, and they're applying for medical marijuana licenses by the thousands. Thousands a day, folks, here in Colorado. Anyway, hundreds of dispensaries have popped up across the formerly great state of Colorado. But the Denver suburb of Centennial voted to ban dispensaries and close the one dope house that had already opened there. That's where we live, in Centennial. But a liberal judge has blocked the closing of the one pot shop that we apparently have here in Centennial, Colorado. All right, now stick with me, folks. We're almost to the end. Dayline Avon, Colorado. We're trying to explain how it is that someone ends up making a movie with chimpanzees. From Avon, Colorado, a Colorado man says marijuana is the main sacrament of his religion, and a drug charge against him violates his First Amendment right to exercise, free exercise of religion. Trevor Douglas says he belongs to the THC ministry. Yeah, he told the Vail Daily newspaper that his religion is similar to Christianity, and that the use of pot is sacred to him, just like wine and bread are sacred to Christians. Okay. First of all, Mr. Douglas, wine and bread are not sacred to Christians. Okay? They're not. And second of all, in our religion, Jesus Christ rose from the dead to redeem us from our sins and to bring light into the world. It wasn't someone coming to change your bong water, to give you some spiritual enlightenment. So I don't know that it's too similar to Christianity. I'd be willing to sit down and discuss it with you if you could focus for more than 15 seconds. According to the website of the THC Ministry, they have offices in Los Angeles, Bozeman, Montana, and, of course, Boulder, Colorado. They say we use cannabis religiously, and you can too. Cultivation and enjoyment of cannabis sacrament is a fundamental human right provided by God and protected by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. THC Ministry says it provides defense to prosecution to its members who are sincere practitioners. That means a hardcore pothead. You got to be a real stoner, okay? Anyway, this guy's due to go in court in March. He maintains he's not a drug abuser. Okay, I'm willing to give him that. You're just a pothead. And just like all these medical marijuana cards that these people are applying for, you're just looking for another way to legitimize and justify your weakness and your sin. That's what it's really about. Okay? Anyway, we have a quote from Mr. Douglas. Believe it or not. What's his name here? Trevor Douglas from the THC Ministry. He says, "Dude, if it's a part of your religion, you should get security from this prosecution of possession. Possession of prosecution. What did I say?" All right. So there's Mr. Douglas. Dateline Aspen, Colorado. It's like a beer competition for marijuana. That's right. A cannabis festival in Aspen this spring will be the first in the state for approved pot growers to put their strains in a contest. Yeah, about 50 medical marijuana growers. Now that should, talk about a place where the term alleged should appear. It should be right before the word medical and marijuana. Thank you very much. My goodness, how do you miss that? About 50 medical marijuana growers enter their strains of weed into this contest, and the marijuana will be tested for its THC levels. Growers will also be able to sell their medical marijuana to alleged medical marijuana patients. Okay, so how often have you heard of, let's say, Merck having a contest with SC Novi to find out who's got the highest grade of whatever drug they make? Have you ever heard of two pharmaceutical or 50 pharmaceutical companies having a festival where everybody's dressed in cut-off jeans and T-shirts and they compare the quality of the polypropanol? Compare the quality of any drug? Can you imagine that? No, you can't imagine that because marijuana is not a drug. And smoking marijuana is not medical, nor is it medicinal. It's just a weakness and a sin, and it makes you a pothead. And relatively stupid. But in mankind's inexorable effort to justify himself and his sin, we have now made marijuana medical. By the way, abortion is now medical. And it's really just weakness and sin, and it's really sad to see. All right, Dateline Sandusky, Ohio. A lottery winner was struck and killed by a car in northern Ohio on the day she got her lottery check winnings. Yes. 47-year-old Deborah McDonald was walking home from a bar when she was hit by a car. Hey, that rhymes even. McDonald had been drinking to celebrate her winning of the lottery. She had just picked up a check. I don't know why I'm laughing. It's just, I have a very dark sense of humor. She had just picked up a check for a little over $5,000, treated her husband and friends to dinner, and went out to have a few and celebrate. So, my warning to those who say eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we die, well, you might just die tonight with the drink still in your hand and blasphemy still on your lips. And it's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. So not to put too fine a point on it, ladies and gentlemen, but God is real, life ain't no dress rehearsal, and you will be held accountable for every idle word that passes your lips. I'm Doug McBurney. That's the Weekly Worldview. I'll be back with you next week. I want to thank KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, Colorado Right to Life, Personhood Colorado Theology Online, and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.